This is GeoTalks, a podcast by Blue Marble Geographics. In this episode of GeoTalks, we discuss the budding efforts to preserve Texas's bigtooth maple population. Bigtooth maples are a tree species native to the Texas Hill Country. Their foliage saturates its canyons and mountainous regions in the fall. However, scientists have discovered that the Texas Hill Country's bigtooth maples are imperiled. Our guest is Kelsey Schwind, a GIS and remote sensing specialist who is notably involved in a project that will shape the future of these trees. She joins us from the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department's Landscape Ecology Program to discuss the project, an automation that will enable research on the species for years. Welcome to GeoTalks, a monthly podcast where we share stories from professionals around the world using GIS technology to solve critical challenges. I'm Meg Scribner, and today I'm joined by a special guest host, Global Mapper Product Manager Mackenzie Mills. Welcome to the show, Mackenzie.
Hello, everyone, and hello, Meg and Kelsey. I'm Mackenzie, as Meg said, and I'm a product manager here at Blue Marble Geographics, and I'm really excited to be on this episode of the GeoTalks podcast. I've really enjoyed our previous few episodes, and I'm excited to introduce our guest, Kelsey, here, who's doing some great GIS work in Texas. Welcome to the podcast. How are you doing today, Kelsey?
Hi, Mackenzie. Hi, Meg. I'm doing well. I'm really excited to be here with you today.
Well, we are really excited to reconnect with you. I do remember I had just started working at Blue Marble when you won our Global Mapper Scholarship Award back in 2020. And I was really impressed by your work with Global Mapper and in the GIS space then. So I'm excited to hear about what you've been up to and what you're doing now.
Thank you. Yes. So right now I am working with the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department. And specifically, I work in the Landscape Ecology Program. I've been there about 2.5 years now, and I'm really enjoying it.
That's fantastic. Yeah, I've been excited to have this conversation ever since we started learning about your work. How are things at the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department?
They're going really well. I'm really enjoying the position. It allows me to use both GIS and remote sensing, which is more my formal background, but also to pair that with ecology, which is something I really enjoy. And I work with an awesome group of people. We have a pretty small program, but I think we each bring our own unique expertise all together for a common goal. So I'm always learning, always meeting new people and finding new interesting projects. And I'm really enjoying it.
It sounds like you guys have a lot going on. And I bet our listeners would find the Landscape Ecology Program from Texas Parks and Wildlife quite interesting, especially those who are interested in GIS and conservation. Could you tell our listeners what the mission of this program is?
So the Landscape Ecology Program provides a really cool niche role within the agency. And ultimately, our job is to provide landscape-level geospatial data for the agency to make data-driven conservation decisions. So we find this, of course, to be very important work, and it focuses more on the ecological side of things. So a lot of vegetation mapping, but a lot of this supports and goes into the efforts to conserve different wildlife species, as well as plant species.
That's amazing. So what is your role in the Landscape Ecology Program specifically?
I am a GIS and remote sensing specialist within the program, and this has been a really exciting role. I've been able to work on what I enjoy, which are the longer term projects. So really starting a project and seeing it come together over the course of a year or two, and that's very, very rewarding. And I'm really enjoying it because it's so nice to have this position where my work is so applicable to, you know, efforts that are actually being used and applications being used by the agency.
That's super interesting. And what drew you to this project and working with the Texas Parks and Wildlife Landscape Ecology Program?
I think, like a lot of people in the conservation world, I grew up with a love of the outdoors. And I'm always so appreciative to have had the opportunity to spend so much time outdoors. And I actually grew up in the Texas Hill Country. So what made this job extra exciting for me is that I already had a deep appreciation for this region. And now through my work, I'm actually able to help, you know, conserve it even more. And every day it allows me to just gain an even deeper appreciation and understanding for the Texas landscape. So I really, really love that. And I appreciate that.
Yeah, it's got to be really rewarding to be able to have that relationship with the land and then be able to play a part in conserving it. That is Awesome. So in preparation for this episode, we learned that the big tooth maple, a tree that's native to the Texas Hill Country, is considered to be imperiled. Can you tell us about the conservation project surrounding this species and why it's important?
Absolutely. So it's really cool with this species, the big tooth maple. It's actually a relic of the previous ice age. So that's when temperatures in Texas were actually cool enough for it to survive here. And now, with the climate having changed, it can only survive in sheltered canyons. So that's where we currently find this species. And it's a deciduous tree, very beautiful. A lot of people go to Lost Maple State Natural Area. That's where we find the most well-documented community so far of this species. And it's important because of for tourism, habitat, and also to help promote an understanding of vegetation communities within canyons, because there are several endemic species that we also find within these canyon communities. And then in the future, we hope that we can identify where there are more big tooth maple communities in these canyons and work to help conserve those communities.
Wow, that sounds like quite the undertaking. How is the Landscape Ecology Program using GIS technology for this project?
So GIS is certainly key to this project. The region that we're looking at, the study area of the Texas Hill Country, specifically called the Balcones Escarpment for this project, is about 4.4 million acres. So of course, using GIS allows us to then automate the process of extracting canyons from this region in order to help with future modeling efforts, actually ongoing modeling efforts, as well as updating the maps of Texas. So GIS is absolutely what we relied on for extracting those canyons within such a large area.
That sounds like quite a large project. I'm really curious about what kinds of data you're using in your workflow. Are you using aerial collected data, maybe drone collected data, LIDAR, or pre-processed publicly available elevation grids?
Yes, so we are using publicly available elevation data, and this is collected from the Texas Geographic Information Office. Really great resource. They provide a lot of publicly available data. It's compiled there. And from that, I was actually able to get 1 meter elevation models for the entirety of the study area. And those elevation models were derived from airborne LIDAR data. And then from that elevation data, we were also able to then generate slope models using that.
So you're using slope models to help identify certain areas within this elevation data that you're working with. What other markers or processes are you using to identify places where you might find big tooth maples?
Yes, so we're using the study area because we know that that is where we have observed maples, but really the elevation and slope maps are key to the entire process. So we have the elevation models, which allow us to derive the slope. And from there, we actually had not found any other studies that did work similar to this. So we had to be the ones to determine, well, what do we consider a canyon in this case? And what we ultimately decided was if a canyon had a 30-degree slope on the walls, that's what we wanted to pull in. And that was just from visual interpretation. And then from there, we had the slope threshold for canyons. We did some hydrologic modeling to identify the bottoms of canyons by generating streams. So that may or may not be where a stream actually exists, but that allowed us to at least have a starting place and say, okay, well, this could be a canyon we're interested in. And then if the stream network or bottom of the canyon was within a certain buffer distance of that slope threshold and it met that slope threshold, we said, okay, this is a canyon of interest. And then from there, we were actually able to use those elevation models in conjunction with a machine vision tool. And that machine vision tool actually outputs landform features. So the streams themselves don't do us much good, but that landform output allowed us to capture then the valleys of the canyons and the foot slopes and the slope walls out to the ridges of the canyons. And then from there, shout out to Global Mapper, we were able to use the watershed analysis tool within Global Mapper to then go ahead and split those canyons by watershed. So at the end of the project, those were all the tools and steps essentially in order to create individual canyons from that data. But also a big motivation for finding these canyons is also to update our land cover classification to also generate a couple new classes so that within the Texas Hill Country, we would also have different landform classes such as, you know, hopefully Big Tooth Maple Mesic Canyon and Deciduous Mesic Canyon. So we're hoping that the canyons also we can incorporate into those mapping systems. And while we did that right now, because of the maples within the Balcones Escarpments or Texas Hill Country, we also will apply those to other regions of the state as well that have canyons in the future.
That sounds like quite a complex and interesting process using a lot of different GIS tools and processes. Are you doing a lot of this work manually, or are you doing some type of automation to, you know, optimize efficiency there?
Really, the only thing that was manually done was just looking over the study area and trying to determine what that slope threshold would be for the canyons. And then from there, we were able to then automate these tools in order to perform the hydrologic modeling for the stream networks, and then continue to buffer and capture all those landform features, and then finally split everything. So fortunately, this was able to be done automatically.
Yeah, the automation is great for being able to make things more efficient. But it sounds like you guys have designed a great pipeline for, you know, taking your source data and putting it into what you need as a result. What are the next steps for this data? You know, where is this data going? Is it being used in the field or by other, you know, agencies?
Yes. So right now we are currently working on, I have a colleague, our lead ecologist. She is working on using these canyon polygons, as well as current observations of big tooth maples we have, and other factors we know are important in determining where they are, such as minimum, maximum elevation, slope, different factors, as well as different vegetation communities present, in order to then create a model where we're trying to predict where big tooth maples are more likely to occur. So which of these canyons I've extracted are most likely to have these maples? And we will then send our botanist out and he will try to ground truth that and see if he can identify any of those species. We're needing to rely on our botanists for this. In the past, we've known people to try to use aerial imagery in order to identify canyons that way, but it was very difficult to distinguish maple trees versus other deciduous trees. So we're looking forward to sending our field botanist out there to see if he has any luck identifying any more maples. And that would be exciting if we could find some more communities out there. And in addition to that, the canyons will also be used to update land cover classification maps that our program provides for the state.
That all sounds like really awesome and amazing work. It's great to see that GIS work that's done in the office being taken out into the field to aid in some of those conservation efforts, identifying populations of big tooth maple trees.
And I'm just curious, did you encounter any challenges while you were working on this project?
Yes, I encountered a lot of challenges. I think the largest challenge just being I expected to find more in the literature. And looking at the canyons, I really tried my best to find a workflow that was already established for this and really didn't find much. I found one article from another country. I couldn't get in touch with the authors. And then I also found they digitized the Grand Canyon. So that, I mean, there was really not much to go off of. So I think one of the greatest challenges just being working through this for such a large area and developing that workflow, everything from, you know, trying to establish the how do we find a starting place for these canyons? And it took a lot of research and time just to develop, oh, well, flow accumulation, hydrologic modeling, that allows us to do that. And then we had the stream network. It looked great. We were happy with this as a starting place for potential canyons. But from there, we really focused a lot on what's called a geomorphon tool. And that's where you can input an elevation model and it will output a raster of landform features. But before discovering that, that was really challenging because we were trying to figure out a method to go all the way up to the ridges of the canyons, because that's what we needed. We need polygons of the whole canyon. So that was the greatest challenge. And then once we got the geomorphon tool, just a lot of data, 4.4 million acres and polygons, I mean, multiple millions and millions of polygons. So data heavy. And then the greatest challenge, I think, just being developing that workflow from scratch, essentially. That's what we ultimately had to do, but it ended up being also a great benefit because we could really tailor it to our needs. And now that we have that workflow, we can use it in other portions of the state later on.
That is amazing. And it sounds like you had a lot to work through, but starting from scratch on a project like that, I guess, means that you're very thorough about things. So,
yeah. And it sounds like you are doing some great work, and starting from scratch was, you know, what you needed to do. But it's important work that, as you said, can be applied to different areas of the state and probably in other states as well. So hopefully someone else can benefit from all that lift that you've done to create this workflow.
Yes, I definitely encourage, if anyone out there, any type of landform feature, in our case, it was canyons, but if anyone needs that in any way, please reach out. And I'm more than happy to share the steps we took and the tools we used. And that would be great. I'd love to collaborate based on that.
You also mentioned working on a project updating land cover maps as new data becomes available. Can you tell us a little bit more about that project?
Yes. So perhaps what our program is best known for actually is providing what's called the ecological mapping systems of Texas. So really exciting work. This is a land cover classification map for the entire state. And Texas being as large and diverse a landscape as it is, we have over 400 classes right now. So that's been exciting work and trying to continue to improve classifications. And with that, what we do is we use Sentinel-2 imagery. So currently the map is 30 meter resolution, but we're working toward and have already updated part of it to 10 meters because we now have access to free Sentinel-2 imagery at 10 meter resolution. And how that works is that imagery is used to create image objects. So when one member of our team is creating image objects, and then I'm generally working on machine learning and running random forest in order to classify the images. And from there, those two are used together to create a general land cover map. And then we also have an improved grassland model. So that will go through and further create even more land cover types, more specific land cover types, as well as using other rasters and data to continue to create more specific classes.
So within the diverse landscape of Texas that you mentioned, since we're talking about a tree project here as well, are you doing any sort of breakdown of different types of forests within that 400 class land cover mapping?
Yes. So for each region of the state, we have different classes and we break those up into large, what we call ecoregions. So a large general area that has fairly similar characteristics and vegetation communities. And in a lot of those, we have different types of forest classes. For example, we're working on the Upper Gulf Coast right now, and we have broadleaf evergreen forest, and we have deciduous forest, as well as needleleaf evergreen forest. So it does get more specific.
That's awesome. That's really cool because Texas is quite large. And for listeners who may not know, as you mentioned, does have quite a diverse land cover over its wide area. And how is this prepared land cover data being used across the state of Texas in other agencies? And maybe is it publicly available?
Yes, what's really exciting about this data is it's actually not only available to the agency, but anyone. So this is publicly available data. If anyone were to go to our website, you could download this data. And there's a lot of ways it's being used. So within the agency, it allows very direct applications, such as the deer permitting process. So a lot of that and the harvest numbers are tied to certain vegetation communities and land cover types. I have a colleague who is currently working on a project to identify conservation areas, ideal conservation areas within the state for specific species of interest. And those classes serve as a baseline that she can link species to habitat quality and assess things such as that. And that same colleague, these are just other applications as well. She used to work as an environmental consultant, and she said it was often used for field data preparation and compiling reports. So I know it's also used, I've heard from environmental consultants and for surveys. And what's great is even landowners. Since this is publicly available, anyone can be involved. And I know landowners are often sometimes curious to see what classes are available. And I know I've had a colleague who just wants to see what type of land cover classes are available at parks she's about to visit. So such a wide array of ways it can be used. And I love that it's so easily available to anyone.
That sounds awesome. It sounds like you're doing a lot of the baseline work to provide data that feeds into a lot of different projects, which is really cool and a great application of GIS.
I have a few more questions for you. We were wondering how long it takes to collect the data necessary to make decisions for conservation planning.
This is a tricky question just because our projects are very different in scope and how long they take, but we generally have very long-term projects. For example, when we're updating our maps, the land cover classification mapping, that is something that is happening, you know, over a really long period of time. So probably for the next 6 or 7 years will be the time it takes in order to update those. And that entire time we have a field botanist going out. And we really want to make sure we have good training data going in by them collecting samples. And then also we have a way to know if the models and land cover classes are accurate. So that's a job they're doing for the next 6 or 7 years over the period of the year they can go collect data. Other projects, probably in the 3 to 5 year range. So for example, with the land cover classes, when we're working on generating those, the general grassland types will then go to a more detailed grassland model that a colleague of mine developed. And that was based off of about 3 to 5 years worth of field data. So our program's very heavy on emphasizing the need of field data and making sure we're creating models that are valuable as well as being able to check those. I'm not sure how long that will take in terms of the maples, so we'll see.
Well, I'm glad that it's being used for more than one thing. How does this data that you collect promote the vision of the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department?
Well, I'll just go ahead and read off the Texas Parks and Wildlife mission or vision, and that is to manage and conserve the natural and cultural resources of Texas and to provide hunting, fishing, and recreational opportunities for the enjoyment of present and future generations. And I would like to think that we play a very important role of conserving the natural resources of Texas. So Texas Parks and Wildlife as an agency has a lot to consider when making conservation decisions, but we really would like to think we play a large role in the data-driven science aspect of that.
Well, I feel like that's the perfect place to wrap up our conversation. Thank you for joining us on the show, Kelsey.
It was great to hear all about the work that you're doing and the projects that you're working on. Are there any ways our listeners can get involved in the efforts or learn more about the Texas Parks and Wildlife Landscape Ecology Program?
Yes, they could definitely go look at our website. So I really encourage anybody who's interested to look up Landscape Ecology Program, Texas Parks and Wildlife Department, and browse that. Please reach out to me if you have any questions. And again, I work with a wonderful team. A lot of them, you know, have expertise in more the ecology side of things and each have their own set of models they're working on and just such interesting, great work. So please let me know if you have questions on that. And I'm happy to reach out to them as well. Texas Parks and Wildlife also has various volunteer opportunities as well. So if you're just interested in, you know, getting outside more or trying to help with the agency's mission, please let me know as well. And there's someone I can have you reach out to for that. And again, I'd like to give a shout out to all the incredible people I work with. And I really, really appreciate you guys having me on today. And I've really enjoyed this a lot.
We are excited to see what you guys at Texas Parks and Wildlife do in the coming years. So thank you for joining us. If you enjoyed learning about Kelsey's amazing work with the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department and Landscape Ecology Program, it doesn't end here. Their comprehensive approach to conservation excites us about what the future holds for them. We encourage you to check out all of the department's programs, volunteer opportunities, and other initiatives, especially our listeners living in Texas. Thank you! You can find our show notes, including any resources or data that we mentioned, in the description. If you enjoyed listening, subscribe to our podcast and turn on notifications so you don't miss any episodes.